Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Brexit podcast. While bankers may not top the polls as Britain's most popular members of society, would we be bankrupt without them? With London's status as the number one financial centre in the world uncertain, there are warnings that the knock-on effect could cripple the UK economy. But is this just inflated opinion? One man who has more of a handle on these matters than most is campaigning financial journalist Simon Reid. Simon's currently on a round Britain tour filming money stories for the BBC, but he took a bit of time out to join me after a two-day stint in Halifax to outline just how important financial services are to Britain's present and future. Enjoy the episode, and if you have any thoughts, then we'd love to hear from you. You can find us at brexitpodcast.com or catch up with us on Twitter and Facebook.
Today's guest is one of the highest profile financial journalists in the country, and that's not just because he's manager of FC Scribblers. He does know a little bit about money. Welcome to the Brexit podcast, Mr. Simon Reid.
Hello, Tim. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I do want to talk about football. You're a glory hunting Chelsea fan, but do you still manage the journalist team?
Yes, we do. In fact, we've got a game coming up, if you're available.
I might be. It depends. Whereabouts is it? Who's it against?
It's against a team of bankers. It's at Roots Hall in Southend United's ground.
Fantastic. I'll let you know. I'll get my people to give you a call on that one.
Okay.
Let's get back to the matter in hand. I want to talk to you about how Brexit is affecting our financial sector in the UK. It's not something we've covered that much. We probably should have covered it more on the podcast so far. But it's a disaster, isn't it? I mean, Lloyd's of London are banning the brokers from enjoying a lunchtime pint. I mean, surely this is the end.
This is the end. This is, I mean, you know, you could ally that with the fact that Lloyd's is opening offices in Europe, in Brussels, for instance. But, it's interesting, I think, that the city is growing up and not the long lunches are a thing of the past. I don't think that the Brexit has a beer effect. I think it has more sobering effects on the fact that the financial industry knows it needs to work within the EU, and so it's trying to find ways that it can do that successfully in a post-Brexit world, and it's not going to be easy.
How important is the financial sector to the UK economy?
It's massive. You know, the UK is, I think at the moment, it's still the fifth largest economy, has been wavering up and down. I don't know if it dropped six, but the biggest one, the biggest part, the service sector, which comprises the financial services sector, works out about 4/5 of the UK economy. Financial services employs in this country something like 2 million people. It's massive. We've got huge global companies that are here because London has such a great reputation as a financial centre. You know, the successive governments have made it attractive for companies to come here. London in particular is regarded as the financial centre of the world, and that's not me just saying it or the mayor of London or anyone. There's an index called the Global Financial Centres Index, which tops things up. London overtook New York back in 2015, and still the latest one is published in March. Is still the number one financial sector financial centre in the world. That is likely to change. Both London, New York remain second, Singapore third. London and New York are dropping in points. You know, the index works on a number of factors, but because of the uncertainty around Brexit and in the US, the uncertainty with their
Maverick
is the word. Yes, I was trying to find the right word. There's uncertainty about that. So it's quite likely that Singapore will overtake both London and New York as the world's top global financial centre in the next 12 months or so. You know, that's a sort of sign of the times.
Yeah, I had a question. Look, Beijing's also rising fast, isn't it? So everything's happening in the east.
Yeah, well, Hong Kong is actually fourth. But yeah, Beijing, oddly enough, the only other European financial centre in the top 20 in the index is Luxembourg, and that's at lowly 18th, which shows that how important London is to Europe and how important the negotiations to keep London or to keep Europe as part of the global financial hierarchy is going to be in the coming months.
Well, you mentioned there just how many people are employed in the financial sector. Also, there's an awful lot of smart people employed in the financial sector, so they must have been making some plans. I mean, Brexit now has been on the horizon for the past nearly a year now, isn't it? So
yes,
you know, they must be getting their house in order.
The fact is that the big banks had plans for every eventuality, and they have to under law, in fact, you know, to ensure that they can remain robust. The Bank of England forces them to make plans and publish what they will do in the event of you know, catastrophes or so forth. Brexit is a particular catastrophe for them. What it means for the banks at the moment, there's this thing called passporting, where they can operate in any EU country, you know, just with a local office. Now, that is likely to disappear once all the trade deals are done, which means they'll only be able to operate in the EU, I gather, is if they have a separate office set up. Now, some are talking about setting up offices in Dublin, because, as we know, Ireland is can remain as part of the EU. But, you know, that all big European financial centres, Luxembourg, I've mentioned, Frankfurt, and others, you know, are trying to encourage banks to consider their own centres to move there. And there was one report that something like more than 200,000 workers from the City of London could be tempted abroad post-Brexit. Now, I don't think it's going to be anything like that, but we're certainly going to see a stream of banks, you know, opening more important branches abroad. We're certainly going to see thousands, if not tens of thousands, of UK and London-based jobs leaving to go to European countries.
In terms of who actually is in charge of the banks, who owns them, whether, you know, government have taken stake over the years after the financial crisis, you know, sort of British-owned banks or foreign-owned banks, does that make a difference to what will happen moving forward?
No, it doesn't make any difference at all. I mean, you know, in fact, the government still only owns RBS largely, or which means we largely own it. But, you know, they've got to make decisions based on their future governance, on their future stability. So they will ultimately, you know, do deals with whichever financial centre offers them the best opportunities, you know, for dealing, for carrying on their normal business. You know, we're not going to see a mass exodus of these big companies, but, you know, we will see some movement. Barclays, which never was part of the government buyouts back in the crisis in 2008, you know, is going to be moving a lot staff to Dublin. And I say a lot, I mean, at the moment we're only talking about low hundreds, I think. You know, but that kind of figure could grow. HSBC has been linked with France. You know, the others, Lloyds, you know, Frankfurt, who knows?
Once you do start, so it's once these characters are this high net worth individuals as well, aren't they? So they're obviously earning a lot of money and ploughing a lot of money back into the economy. So if you've got somebody who's earning sort of a couple of £1 million a year and then they decide to bugger off abroad, then I guess that takes quite a little bit out.
Yeah, I mean, here's a figure which I find quite interesting. It's the amount of value that workers add to the economy. Okay, so people who are in the financial and related sector contribute a net £87,000, whereas the annual average for workers in other sectors is only £52,000. You know, so they do bring an awful lot of money into the economy. You know, I know that a lot of us hate bankers for all sorts of reasons, but they are a valuable contributor to all of us. You know, if we lose that, if London ceases to become a global financial sector, that will impact on jobs, not just in the financial services sector, but obviously in all the other sectors which service the city.
Do the corporations, have they got the ability to bully government into getting what they want here? I mean, given, you know, you've outlined how much sway they do have.
Yeah, I mean, especially the big global ones, they can do deals. You know, it can be, you know, we know governments in the past have done tax deals, have done, you know, encourage companies to move to London, to move to other parts of the country, of course, the Northern Powerhouse, or whatever else is the current flavour of the month. So they do have a lot of sway. you know, if a big company, you know, with 100,000 employees says, right, unless you as the UK government does this, we're gonna move all our workers abroad. What can the government do? All it can do is to offer them better terms. You know, so there is the government is under great pressure from these companies. I'm sure behind the scenes there's all sorts of negotiations going on beyond the negotiations the government has to do with the EU countries.
Yeah, and how important is that a trade deal is struck between between Britain and Europe?
It's very important that we have a trade deal. We've got to allow the banks to do their business. It means that they need to do business in Europe. You know, there have been talks about the banks wanting still to be governed by the European Court of Justice, for instance, you know, because that would allow them to keep the governance in the right shape going forward. So the trade, you know, if no trade deal or whatever, that's going to be a huge problem for the financial sector.
The European Court of Justice is quite an interesting one, because the European Central Bank actually wanted to take a few more powers into its own jurisdiction, didn't it, like the clearing of euro derivatives?
Yes, yes.
And the European Court of Justice actually stopped that, which you could say would benefit Britain. But now we're, you know, with a clean Brexit, if we put it the Tory way, then we would step away from the European Court of Justice. There's a sort of delicious irony there somewhere.
Yeah, and that would be a problem, because you know, the derivatives you mentioned is a massive money, you know, sort of billions of pounds, and London is the centre of all the European derivatives at the moment. If we lose that would be a huge blow to the city.
Just in terms of on an individual level, how do you see, what are people concerned about? Loans, current accounts, you know, their investments, their pensions. How do you think these things are going to be affected as we move forward?
The biggest indicator right now is inflation, that it's rising. It's 2.3% at the moment. The Bank of England has warned it might rise to as much as 2.8% in the future. What does that mean for us all? It means rising prices. It means the cost of our food will go up. It means the cost of our energy is going up. You know, it's going to be a problem. It will mean if people don't knuckle down, tighten their belts, then they could fall into financial difficulties. And if they fall into financial difficulties, that will leave the door open to more scrupulous lenders to come into the market.
Borrow
money at high cost.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you actually about the unscrupulous lenders, because I know I imagine you still do it, but you've been fighting a good fight against sort of payday loan sharks for quite some time now, trying to get more regulation into that market.
Yeah, and the fact is that the market is much more highly regulated now. Almost all the bad practices have gone, but there are still lenders out there, and there are still backstreet lenders out there. There are people who will lend money at huge high rates and still operate outside the law. You know, but they can only work when people get into trouble. You know, we talk about the fact that people get into a debt cycle. So I borrow £100 to see me through this month, and I can't afford to pay it off next month, so I borrow £200, and then it becomes £400, and pretty soon I have £1,000, and there's no way for me to get out of this debt cycle. And the loan sharks who are lending the money prey on this, and then just keep lending more to keep people, can face a lifetime of debt. Now, when people are doing well, and they don't need to borrow money, that's fine. But increasingly, people are likely to need to borrow money, and that will open the door to the people who operate outside the law, the doorstep, the backstreet lenders, you know, who will sucker people into this debt cycle. That's what concerns me. I'm not so concerned so much about the payday lender sector or the high-cost credit sector, because they are more highly regulated. They have to be responsible about their lending. They shouldn't be able to force people into a debt cycle like they did in the past. In fact, the worst people at the moment are the banks, who, you know, they love people who go into overdraft, because then they can charge them, then they can send them all sorts of fees on their account, and they like people to continue to go into the red, because they can keep on charging them more interest.
Yeah, and I suppose if the financial sector does start to struggle in some way, then they will have to be looking at these kind of measures to get their pound of flesh, so to speak.
Well, you know, you look at savings rates. They're just laughable at the moment. I mentioned inflation is 2.3%. The government has just launched a national savings bond, which pays market-leading rate, 2.2%, that's below inflation. But if you've got money in a savings account in the bank, you're going to be, if you check it now, you're going to be getting less than 1% or so. You know, you can get a bit better if you chop around and go to a name that you haven't heard of. But in that, in the sort of high street banks and bill societies, the rates are just, you know, lamentable. And that will continue. I don't see savings rates climbing at all. What we will see, I think, is mortgage rates climbing. You know, at the moment, because of the competition in the mortgage market, you can get great long-term deals. You could get a mortgage for less than 1% launched last week. You know, you could go for 5 years, you can get 1%, 2%. These are really fantastic deals. These are likely to disappear in the coming months as we approach Brexit and as inflation ravages and all these other things come into play.
Yeah, it's. Do you think the general election is going to be good for the financial sector? Is it with the Tories? You know, if Theresa May steamroll as the opposition, is that what the banks want?
If Theresa May steamroll as the opposition, then what we will have then is a bit more certainty about, you know, what's going on. So markets, financial markets like certainty. You know, I don't know how well they negotiate with the Tories, but I suspect that's what the financial services sector would like. If you know, I have heard pub talk. I have heard that some people believe that Theresa May has promised to liberty. She enabled Article 50 and with the review to call the election, so that then the Labour could get in, and that then Corbyn would be left with the man to pick up all the mess and have the legacy of disaster. I can't see that as a working theory, to be honest. But you know, we've had so many surprises in the previous votes in this country. It seems almost anything's possible.
Yeah, right, anything off is slightly conspiratorial. However, if Corbyn did get in, what would happen then?
Well, you know, all his faults, he's not a stupid man. I mean, he's aware of the importance of the financial sector. We've got a Labour mayor in London. You know, he'll be stressing that, and, you know, right into the right bosses. That wouldn't be a disaster for financial services by far, I think. You know, that could well lead to a stronger and more stable negotiation with Europe, and you know, taking account of the needs of the financial services sector and all the workers that are involved in it.
Okay, and just finally, if we were going to have this chat again in 10 years' time, what would you expect Britain's financial sector to be?
It's difficult to say at the moment. I do seriously expect a number of banks, insurance companies, whatever, to move operations out of the UK if we carry on this current path. You know, so in 10 years' time, you know, we could be thinking about, oh, do you remember when London was the world's leading financial sector? Who knows, by then it might have dropped below Luxembourg. You know, and that would be a disaster for the country economically if that happened. I hope it doesn't, but, you know, it's something we have to face up to.
That's all we've got time for this week's Brexit podcast. Thank you for joining us. And if you'd like to drop us your thoughts on this show or suggest future guests, then please get in touch with us, Brexit Podcast on Twitter and Facebook, or visit the website at brexitpodcast.com. The show has been produced by Jennifer Hahn, Tim Hemming and Warren Pohl, with the theme music by Kevin MacLeod.